everybody. Welcome to episode 374 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. And this is a Valiant Sunday episode. And we're going to be talking about Shadow Man. We'll dive back into VH1, into his roots where he was first created. We'll talk a little bit about the most current iteration. And somewhere in between there, we'll talk about what did and didn't work for us when the Valiant kind of relaunched Shadow Man. So I have Jesse joining me once again, our resident Valiant expert. Thanks for joining me, Jesse.
Excited to be here. Been waiting to talk about Shadow Man for a minute.
Yeah, and did you get a chance to hear what Robert Myers had to say at Denver Comic Con last weekend about the Incursion titles, or Valiant Beyond titles, I should say?
No, I did not hear his words. I knew that it had to do with Deadside and Space, so I'm curious as where what he did say.
Yeah, he is very, very excited about the kind of the direction and the future of Valiant, so that's a good thing. And, I think a lot of Valiant fans were kind of waiting, right? Like, there's been this transition. There's been this kind of sense of what's going to happen, the sense of the unknown. And to hear Robert tell, they've been working on this stuff. The work's never stopped. But I think Valiant fans had kind of gotten used to a steady stream of information. So they don't feel like they ever really lost momentum. But it was just a matter of timing. So I think that now that they've made one announcement, I think more will come on a much more steady, maybe at a steadier pace like Valiant fans are used to. So obviously Incursion is going to be their next event, their big event for 2019. He specifically mentioned they don't like to go from event to event to event. You get event fatigue, which I think a lot of Marvel fans have. So Harbinger Wars 2 going on right now. Jesse and I will talk a little bit about the most recent issue, Harbinger Wars 2, issue 2, which comes out this coming Wednesday on the 27th. Incursion's going to be coming early 2019, and pretty excited about that. But beyond that, the Livewire title, the Dreamside title with Faith, and then the Bloodshot title, it sounds like there's a lot of good stuff coming. So if any of you haven't had a chance to listen to last week's episode, I highly encourage you, go check it out, hear what Robert had to say. It's a lot. I mean, basically, when I talked to him, I was like, hey, would you like to come on the show and give a little more information about these Valiant Beyond titles, something more than was in the initial press release. And I really didn't expect much. But there's a lot there if you listen to the interview, both what Robert says and where you can read between the lines. So I really encourage you to all go and check that out. So, but as I said, this episode is all about Shadow Man. Issue 4 of the latest series came out last Wednesday on the 20th. I really liked it. It was somewhat unexpected for me. I didn't think it would take that kind of direction, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. But before we do, Jesse, let me ask you because I think the origins of both the VH1 Shadow Man and the new one are very, very, very similar. Why don't you give us the origin of the original, and then we can kind of talk about what differences there are with this latest iteration.
All right. So there are similarities. I mean, both characters are named Jack Bonface. They're all from New Orleans. And I'll mention later on about the Acclaim years. It wasn't Jack Bonface in that, but it was also in New Orleans. So there's a consistent New Orleans kind of southern theme here. But Jack was a saxophone player living in New Orleans. What was really cool about the original Valiant universe was that it was so cohesive. All right. So he first appears in Exo Manowar issue number 4, as just a background kind of, almost like blink and you miss it kind of cameo, before he finally, comes into his own in Shadow Man issue 1, released a few months later. So the guy is basically bitten by a spider alien, which was the original Valiant universe is, I guess, version of the Vine in Exo Manowar. They're sort of like an outer space kind of threat, cannibalistic alien race. And it has a unique effect on him, which almost was vampiric or almost werewolf-like similarities. But with a kind of a voodoo tone, he becomes the Shadow Man. He ends up having these powers, but initially he only has them at nighttime. And it's the same thing you'd expect. He has enhanced speed and strength, his heightened senses at night. He has an extreme rage. It never really defines his powers, unfortunately, too much. I think that the Valiant universe as a whole has been pretty bad about defining the limitations, plus or minus of their characters. But I've heard argued that he kind of has the same strengths, perhaps, as Captain America in many respects, peak human strength. And he was integrated very well with the original Valiant universe. His costume made a lot of sense because it wasn't this hokey thing was just with a logo on it. That was actually handmade by a woman in New Orleans for him to symbolize, him coming out of the darkness and fighting evil and whatnot. It was a very, very comic booky, enjoyable storyline. It was one of the best-selling titles of that time. It was outselling DC and Marvel in many respects at the time. And of course, we had the downfall of Valiant, which went into the Acclaim years. And then they had a different take on that altogether. Now, the newest iteration of Shadow Man since 2012 has captured a lot of that same background. Yeah, you have a New Orleans setting. There's no spider aliens anymore, so it's more of a voodoo kind of a dark side spiritual background for the new origin of the new Shadow Man, which takes a lot of that from the Acclaim years. So what you're getting is a character that is based on the original Valiant character, but an origin story and kind of background music being played, with the setting and mysticism and spirituality of what you got from Acclaim. So they kind of blended both universes into one and attempted to make a better story. Now, the first run of Valiant after 2012, it's got some fans. I personally think it was kind of disappointing. Shadow Man, End of Times was kind of disappointing. They kind of had a lot of problems with Shadow Man, except for the Zero issue and issue number 10, which everybody raves about. So that leads us into this current, right now, series of Shadow Man that we're discussing, which I personally believe has been fantastic. It's been exactly what Shadow Man fans needed for some time. We can go into, issues 1, 2, and 3 and whatnot, but to be honest with you, issue number 4, which is what we're about to discuss, I thought that was a delightful treat. I mean, and I don't mean delightful in like a cotton candy kind of way. I mean, it was like a classic, very good, comic book. And it tells us a standalone story that I think, should be added to any checklist of, Shadow Man, fans and collectors, because it's a great story. And it takes you into a different part of the mythos that I don't think has ever been touched on before.
Yeah, it really does. And it's what's interesting about the newest version of Shadow Man. One of the things I think that they got right was turning him into a legacy character. With the previous versions, that wasn't necessarily the case. And I always found it kind of interesting. I did read the first Shadow Man. It's been years. I basically read them once off the rack. The Bob Hall classic VH1 Shadow Man, and very much enjoyed it. I just like the idea of this kind of avenging, spirit of the night, kind of like maybe Valiant's version of Batman, if you will, but with some New Orleans undertones, some Southern feel, some voodoo. But the fact that he was bit by a spider alien and his origin wasn't in voodoo, it's almost like that supernatural aspect of the character and the stories that Bob Hull was telling just came from the setting. Often the guys he was up against were, these voodoo shamans and what have you. So, it was very much rooted in New Orleans, which, for people who have visited there or people like Jesse who've spent a vast majority of their life there, I imagine it felt pretty authentic, no?
Yeah, absolutely. It was there's a lot of aspects of New Orleans that were incorporated, very well so incorporated into the series. the graveyards, the street names, the shops, the newspaper names, the music. It was all very familiar. And so the artists and the writers certainly did their homework when they were putting that together.
Yeah, and that's another part of the aspect of the character that I feel really worked the first time around was the fact that they'd made him a jazz musician. And that was kind of a part of the 2012 version, but it wasn't central to the character. And I feel like that was one of the missteps because it was so ingrained in the first iteration. It was something that really, really worked. It kind of gave you an understanding of the character. You understood kind of his passion and his – his emotionality, the fact that he could lose control. You know, he was a hero and he did, fight for the little guy, but at the same time, he did make mistakes. He did, let his anger get away from him sometime. And I thought that fit the whole jazz musician thing very well. And with this new version, without that kind of softer side of the jazz musician, it just ended up being a lot of anger. And that's one of the things that that didn't work for me. But I personally, I kind of liked, for the most part, what they did with the new version. Bringing in this, as I said, this legacy feel of the character, bringing in this group called the Abettors, who were kind of like maybe a support team or support system for these different Shadow Men over the years. I liked a lot of that, but I think a lot of people didn't necessarily. And there was a lot of complaints early on that the storytelling was a bit inconsistent. And I think personally that everybody was so focused on the differences from the first go around because Shadow Man was such a beloved character. And this more so than Bloodshot or Exo Manowar or even someone like Ninjak or the Harbinger Kids for that matter, this character was more different. This iteration was a bigger departure from what came before in regards to all those other characters. All the other iterations of the other classic Valiant characters were much closer to the original source material. This was a bigger departure. And I think what happened was so many people focused on the differences and the changes they made and complained about it that I think Valiant themselves kind of lost confidence in the ideas they had. And then they decided to bring in Peter Milligan to do this end times thing, and it really didn't work. It focused on all the wrong aspects of him. Like I said, like the anger and abusive father. It kind of made a mess of it. And for me, I've really been enjoying this latest title as well, having just read issue 4. And it seems like Andy Diggle, what he's been trying to do is kind of take those best aspects of the new iteration, take some of the aspects of the old iteration, and try to make it all count, and kind of just move forward and sort of think about the end time stuff as, maybe we can just kind of push that under the bed and forget about it. But he's even bringing in some of what Matt Kent did with the character, because what happened was he got trapped in the dead side. He was stuck there for a long time. He was used to do horrible and terrible things in the service of Baron Samedi. So now we're seeing him in the first three issues we saw he was rescued by one of his close confidants, but now he's been sucked back in. And it seems like he's going to be, based on what we saw in issue 4, he's kind of falling through time. And he's going to be seeing these different iterations of his ancestors over the years being Shadow Man. And what I think is going to happen is he's going to be able to learn from the way they controlled the Loa, the voodoo spirit that gives Shadow Man his power. He's going to learn from the way they handled the anger, the way they handled the temptation to be overcome by the power of these voodoo spirits. And so, I thought issue 4 was really incredible. It reunited Andy Diggle with a longtime collaborator on the Thief of Thieves title from Robert Kirkman's Sky Brown imprint, Sean Martinborough. So that was absolutely incredible, and it told a story. I think it was the 30s or the 40s in Harlem, kind of topical these days with dealing with Nazis and racism and what have you. So I thought it was really, really well done, and it shows to me that unlike what some Valiant fans claimed when Valiant restarted Shadow Man, that, oh, this iteration's hopelessly broken, they screwed it up, it can't work. I think issue 4 of the series, more so than any of the issues of Shadow Man that have come out so far, really shows that the character can work, because as Jesse said, the zero issue of the first title and issue 10 of the first title were critically acclaimed, but those were Master Dark issues. They weren't really focused on Shadow Man. They were telling the story of Master Dark and told very well. So again, I think maybe it didn't get a fair shake the first time around. I enjoyed it. Was there things that were disappointing or wrong? Yeah. Again, I think removing the jazz musician part, having him be so angry, didn't necessarily work for me. But I think Andy Diggle is doing what he needs to do to get the character back on track. And I know he had, when he brought his pitch to Valiant, he had 24 issues, like 2 years worth of Shadow Man story ready to tell. So he's got it planned out for quite a while. If anything that bugged me about the take in the first three issues, the Steven Segovia art, is it Jack Boniface looks so different than he does in the first series, or how we've seen him look up to this point. In the first series, Patrick Zercher did the majority of the art, and Boniface looked like he was of mixed race, like he had a, you know, black father and a white mother. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I can't remember if that was the case or not. But then when Segovia comes in, he just looks like a African-American man. And that I don't know. I mean, I know it shouldn't bother me, but it just did. He looked so different, because if you didn't tell me in the story that that's Jack Boniface, I would have been like, well, who's this guy? Right? He just looks so wildly different. But other than that, I know it's a little nitpicky thing. Other than that, I really enjoyed the first four issues of the latest series. What are your thoughts, Jesse?
Oh, absolutely. I really have liked the first three issues go together as a block, of course, and it leaves you with an open-ended direction. But this issue 4 was pretty amazing. You know, I kind of felt like I was reading an old, almost an old Golden Age comic book that was tied to the modern age. You know, it was kind of like a Shadow Man version of an old Captain America or old Wonder Woman or old, you know, World War II propaganda style a comic book from 1943 or something. And the artwork was on point for that. But I get what you were saying as well, how Jack is connecting to. He's a passenger on this. He's watching how his grandfather, for example, how he dealt with and tamed the Loa, how he mastered his own abilities and the other powers that he was able to work that Jack himself has not ever been able to really figure out. As a Shadow Man fan, I really enjoyed it. I really did. And I think that if we get more like this, I think that a lot of fans are going to be real excited and entertained for sure. I also think it's really cool how they're doing Valiant's doing something a little bit out in the open that nobody's catching on to, and that's Baron Samedi. Because we're seeing him all through Shadow Man, but we're also seeing him in the pages of Bloodshot. You know, he's becoming a tentpole of the dead side, and slowly becoming, or quickly, depending on how you look at it, a tentpole of the Valiant universe as far as big bad guys go. Because he's a big bad guy, and if he's got the power to toss Shadow Man around and send Bloodshot to the future and you know, Shadow Man to the past and whatever. Then there's a heck of a lot more to that character than we've been exposed to, and I think that you know, that's just what the doctor ordered.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Valiant doesn't have enough. I mean, the thing is, when Valiant does a villain, like a tentpole villain, as you know, to borrow your term, they do it so well, you know. But they don't have a lot of those, you know. Like Toya Harada is a, you know, a perfect example. PRS is another example of this, you know, evil corporation. When they do create a villain, it's so fleshed out, and they often live in the gray areas where you can kind of understand their, you know, their motivations. Samedi may be less so. He may be a little more of a mustache twirler, just because his motivations are so different from us. You know, he's undead basically. So obviously his motivations are going to be a little bit different, but, yeah, it's always great when Valiant creates a new villain or raises a villain up to the next level, because they do such a great job of making them such good foils for the heroes of the universe. Let me ask you this, though, Jesse. You mentioned that there were things about the first iteration when Valiant brought Shadowman back in 2012. What were some of the things? I mentioned the things I didn't like. What were some of the things that bothered you about that that comeback?
Well, so I was very familiar with Shadowman back in the 90s and how those stories were told. I was familiar with Jack's role in the Valiant Universe, what he had done in Unity, some of the his crossover, storylines and whatnot, and so it was very concrete in a sense. And then I started reading 2012, and while the artwork looked amazing, I really did like the artwork. The colors were very vibrant. It had a lot. The writing was kind of hoaxy. I was kind of like, man, what am I reading here? I feel like I at the time I was also reading Bloodshot, Harbinger, XO. I was reading everything Valiant was putting out, and that stuff was on a very high level in terms of it was an adult comic, and then all of a sudden I felt like I was almost reading like a kind of a young adult kind of hokey, kind of campy. I don't know what I would call it. It just didn't have the same tone to it. And it was kind of disjointed and inconsistent, in my opinion. I would force myself to read these issues, which I shouldn't have to do because, I like Shadow Man. So why am I having a hard time? I felt like I was studying for a quiz. And I just, it just didn't resonate with me. Whereas this current version absolutely resonates with me. And I've had no problem getting back into the original stuff. I just feel that the tone was off.
So it wasn't the story or the changes or the abettors or any or the setting for you. It was mostly about execution.
Yeah, I mean the story was it was odd. There was one minute he's inside of like a dark space, and then there's a monkey talking to him, and then there's a river, and then there's this, and then there's that, and I'm all kinds of confused. I'm like, what am I reading here? Because when you're reading XO, it's a progressive sequence of events from issue to issue that leads you to a goal. When you're going through Harbinger, or when you're going through Bloodshot, even in Bloodshot, when things were disjointed, they still made sense. I don't know. I felt the execution was off. I think it looked good, but I felt the execution was off. And it was very difficult to get into the characters. I feel that they've done a better job since this new series has come out in making me care about the characters.
Yeah, I think that the now that you mentioned it and thinking back and reading those issues, it goes into the legacy aspect of the character they added that I mentioned. And while that's cool, it does make a higher barrier for entry, because even Jack, he gets the powers and then he has all these abettors coming out of the woodwork and they're telling him about this battle that's being waged, for who knows how long. And, the dead side's been around for hundreds of years possibly. And we're coming in the middle, and it means that you need that much better of a narrative, and you need more exposition, and you need to, go slower and kind of explain it to us. And yeah, you're right. There are a lot of holes that needed to be filled. And in that way, it was very different from anything else Valiant did, because we were kind of coming in, well, maybe with the possible exception of Bloodshot, we were kind of coming in at the beginning of the story with, the majority of these characters. Bloodshot less so, but I think Dwayne Straczynski did a great job of kind of getting us up to speed, pretty fast. So
right. Bloodshot, of course, was as we saw, he was we later found out just the next guy in a line of Bloodshot. So that made sense, but again, Harbinger, when it restarted, everybody was reactivated. I mean, it was like from day one. XO, when it starts, he very first thing, he goes out and finds himself going into space. I mean, so they retold the origin story. And what was really awesome about Shadow Man in 1992 was that was a no-kidding origin story. I mean, like, in XO4, he's just a dude playing saxophone on Bourbon Street.
Yep.
And then in Shadow Man 1, he's, getting bit by a spider alien hooker or whatever. And then he's, you know, they build his suit for him, and then he finds the mask in the street, you know, and then he like, you know, he, then he starts figuring out who he is and whatnot, what he's going to be. I didn't get that with this, with the 2012 version. I got tossed right into it, and while it looked good, it just was executed wrong.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And again, I got, but even beyond that, for me, it's just that whole anger aspect. That's such a departure from the original Jack Boniface. Like I said, that was an aspect of his character. He could lose his cool. But that's why he had the jazz music as kind of his outlet, right? His creative outlet, and to kind of be in touch with that side of himself. And they didn't, I just felt like that was such a misstep with this new version. But I feel like hopefully this travel through time, this adventure through time, which it kind of looks to me like that's what's going to happen. Jack's basically falling through time, watching, as I said, his ancestors who previously wore the Shadow Man mantle, and seeing how they dealt with it. So yeah, we saw his great-great-grandfather in late 30s, early 40s time period, you know, right as World War II is, and the Nazis are rising, plays a key role in the story itself. So very curious to see where it goes next. Is he going to fall forward? Is he going to fall back? And as long as we have Diggle and Martinborough on it, I mean, yeah, I'm in for sure. So really pleased. And I hope that Shadow Man fans who kind of shied away from the character for whatever particular reason they didn't like it, either when they relaunched in 2012 or the most recent iteration when he was the magpie in the Deadside, come back and give it a try, because I feel like with this issue 4, it's this new series is really starting to hit its stride. Would you agree, Jesse?
Absolutely. You know, and I'm very excited to see this. I know there's been a pent up desire for Shadow Man for some time. I frequent the different fan forums and boards, and I've seen it over and over and over again. You know, people be like a post, hey, what do you want? What do you hope for next year? And people so many times say something to the effect of, where's Shadow Man? I want Shadow Man, you know? And so I'm glad to see it finally coming out like that.
Yeah, actually, I mean, this will tell you how excited I am. Now, let me first of all say unequivocally that I would never cosplay, not that there's anything wrong with dressing up, but see, my wife thinks that it's a bridge too far, and she's promised to divorce me if I ever do dress up for a convention. So for that reason, I never will. But that being said, if I ever did dress up as a character, man, Shadow Man would be like way up there for me. And this latest issue really got me excited about it again. I was like, yeah, man, that would be really cool to go to a convention rocking the Shadow Man outfit for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I might steal that idea and go as a 1992 Shadow Man with a long ponytail and the saxophone.
There you go. Well, you've got the New Orleans roots that would work for you perfectly.
Yep.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit briefly about Harbinger Wars 2, Issue 2. It doesn't come out till this coming Wednesday, so obviously we're not going to spoil anything for you listeners, but we just want to talk about it briefly. What did you think? What were your overall impressions, Jesse?
Okay, we went into this pretty much in detail a while back, talking about the artwork from the Prelude as compared to the first issue. So I don't want to rehash all that now, because what we have is what we have. Thomas Chiarello, he's back, and I like his artwork. We also have, see if I get this right, is it Renato? I believe it's Renato.
Yep.
Who's doing some phenomenal painting work in there as well. And it looks very good. It looks very good. Don't get me wrong at all. It's a very well drawn and colored issue. I think I'm going to be a little bit disappointed. I was hoping that this series would get better, and I'm going to read every issue, and I'm going to try my best to enjoy every issue. But I feel like the justifications characters are having are not necessarily grounded in logic. And I'm still kind of wondering why Peter's running around, you know, as like a quarter of the man he should be. And then I even in the sites I'm watching and reading and on the page, I'm looking at it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what in the hell? Because if you go back to Unity issue number one, I mean, you'll watch, you know, how terrified Toyo Harada was of Exo Manowar. I mean, Toyo Harada is like, you know, 3 to 4 times the Psyot and experience and power, that untrained and untapped Peter is. And yet Peter is, as you'll see, I don't know, they got him running around like a lunatic, but somehow his powers are so good that he can, like, you know, fend off multiple attacks at once. I'm just confused as to how this is working. I feel like there's a little bit of background that the might have needed to be explored, not for the issue, but for the writers to make sure that they're in alignment with their own mythos, their own character history. Because I don't feel like I'm really observing the characters that I'm used to reading about. I feel like some of these characters are a bizarre kind of mutated version of what they really are or they would really be. You know, and little writing things in there, like, you know, where there's a scene, a panel in there where one of the characters that said, I remember what you did, and, you know, back in the Middle East, and how your sergeant made you do that thing. I can tell you something. That's not how it works. Your sergeant doesn't make you do anything in the heat of battle like that. You know, you're going to come back to regret, you know, for the rest of your life or whatever. That's a cool literary tool to use, but it's written by somebody, unfortunately, that doesn't have any background or experience with how that really works. So it's, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being nitpicky, but I desperately want to enjoy this series. I'm going to invest in this series. I'm going to read it, this series. I'm going to talk about this series, but I'm just not as impressed as I have been with other major events.
Yeah, and you know, this might go back to what Jesse and I talked about when we talked about Harbinger Wars 2 for the first time, which is the change in structure. You know, Matt Kent wasn't necessarily thinking he was going to have to shoulder the whole load, right? Like, he was going to be sharing it with Eric Heiser, and now, you know, his narratives had to change. He's had to incorporate Livewire and that half of the story in with his, and so you just wonder how much that's effective. But I tend to agree with Jesse. I mean, there are things that don't. First of all, why is Peter running? You know, Jesse made this point last time. This guy can fly. He can. I mean, there's no reason for him to literally be running from Charlie Palmer. There's no reason for it. But yeah, he seems all of a sudden righteously powerful and able to control his powers better than we've ever seen him before. Because again, this guy still has never been trained or taken the time to, you know, explore his powers even on his own. When he's on his own, he's pretty much, you know, doping himself up to the gills so he can drown out the noise of everyone else's thoughts. And now all of a sudden he's running around activating Psyots, like literally running around, which makes no sense. And then when he does get in a battle with several other Valiant characters, it's cool. It, you know, it's a cool idea. But yeah, it doesn't make any logical sense, you know, to Jesse's point, somehow he's able to have a better idea and understanding of how to defeat Exo Manowar than Toyo Harada himself. That doesn't necessarily shine true. And then the way Ninjak defeats him makes completely no sense. It's so nonsensical. It's like, okay, well, if we can get Pete to close his eyes, then we can beat him because he can't see us. Like, that, this guy can sense other minds all the way on the other side of the planet. What difference does it make if his eyes are opened or closed? So, yeah, I had some problems with that. The other thing that kind of bugged me was there's an interaction between Livewire and Divinity, which I almost felt like, I mean, it wasn't completely out of character for Divinity, but I did feel like, okay, here's our, like, obligatory Divinity scene for the series, so we understand why we don't see Divinity show up. Like, Matt Kent's like, hey, we got to throw Divinity in just so we know where what he's up to, and then we'll just move on and, you know, continue telling the story. that was kind of strange. I did really like the Bloodshot sequence. The way he works together with Livewire was cool and interesting. The other thing that was interesting, and I don't know if you caught this, Jesse, when Ninjak and Charlie Palmer and Exo Manowar are fighting against Pete, when they defeat him, Ninjak says something about mind management. You guys should invest in some mind management. I don't know if you're aware, but that's mind management was the name of Matt Kent's long-running Dark Horse series. So that stood out to me that he's putting the words mind management in Ninjak's mouth, kind of plugging his own previous work. So that was kind of funny. And then obviously the last page was kind of a big surprise. A character I didn't even know was going to show up in this title. So yeah, I tend to agree with you. I'm going to read it all. It's not a terrible story. There are some places where it kind of falls down and doesn't necessarily make sense. And I think this is one of those times where Valiant's kind of a victim of its own success, because we've come to expect such high, you know, level of story and continuity and everything, that when there are some things that go wrong, it kind of makes it more obvious than it would in a book from a different publisher, let's say. So I think the art was solid. You know, again, Jesse mentioned, we talked about it before. I'm just not sure that this, you know, painted style quality art is the best for a big comic book event like this. But it is interesting. And I think what's most interesting and what I'm most interested about is that Livewire series that's going to spin out of this. Like, what are going to be the consequences, right? What's the price that Amanda's going to have to pay for the choices she's made? And the other psyops, the ones that Pete's been activating and have run off to the farmhouse where Faith and Torque are, among others, they're even talking about it amongst themselves about, yeah, Amanda has started a war. It really is a war, and people are going to have to start taking sides. And there's an interesting interaction between Faith and one of the kids where one of the kids says, anybody that's going to survive this war that she started, if they weren't a fighter when they, you know, as far as Psyots, if it wasn't a Psyot that was a fighter when the war started, if they're going to survive this war, they'll be a fighter by the end of it. And I thought that was a really good line as well. So a solid issue, but again, I think there are just overall some structural or some big idea issues with it. And again, my thinking or my belief would be that it probably has a lot to do with the shakeup in the structure of the series that Matt Kent had to basically absorb at the last minute. So I'm not going to hold it against him too much, just based on kind of the situation he was put in. And we'll wait. We'll see how it reads all together when it's all said and done, whether the good can outweigh the little kind of nitpicky things that just don't seem to make sense. Is there anything else you want to add about Harbinger Wars, Jesse?
No, I'm still excited to watch where it goes. I know that we've been told this is going to be the turning point for the Valiant universe, and I'm rooting for Valiant. I'm rooting for the Valiant universe. I'm very excited to see where things go. I know the talent is there. I'm very happy with what I'm seeing right now in Bloodshot. I'm very happy with what I'm seeing in Ninja K. Shadow Man's staying on point. I really haven't been disappointed that much at all. I am kind of saddened to a degree. I'm not saddened, but disappointed to a degree with Harbinger Wars, mainly because I know that they're better than this. I kind of feel like if I was going to make an analogy to a movie, that I'm watching Spider-Man 3, or that I'm watching The Amazing Spider-Man 2, or that I'm watching the Justice League, in the sense that they have so many things thrown into the pot and they're calling it a soup, you know? And then, you know, when you have that much going on, too many ideas, you know, it might have made sense for the creators and to the editors and whatnot, because they had awareness of the broader context of things, but it doesn't make sense to the audience because the audience isn't aware of all the additional things that you and ideas that you had to cut or edited or removed or added back in at the last minute. And that creates kind of a disjoint, kind of confusing thing. We end up with The Last Jedi, or we end up with, you know, something to that effect, where we're the audience are kind of like, wait, what in the world? Why? That doesn't make sense. Wait, hold on. Why is he doing that? That's not what the character would do. Hey, that doesn't make it. Why, well, now why is that here? You know, and there's no reason for that. This is going to sound almost rude, but I kind of think that, like, at this point, for certain events like this, Valiant should probably hire somebody to read their stuff and say, man, that's not a really good idea. Try this instead. Now, I'm kind of saying that in jest, because I know that they do have people to do that. I get it. But what I'm saying is that it's, what they have is a Spider-Man 3 with this. That's what they have right now.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. It's just, it's not that it's terrible, but it's just that it had the potential to be so much better. And I mean, everybody was so excited for it when we, you know, heard about this original structure, right? Like, you know, it's going to be 4 48-page issues, and, you know, Kent's going to write half of it, Heiser's going to write the other half, and, you know, it was going to be something different and something really special. And then Heiser leaves, they turn it into just a regular 6-issue story, and, you know, Kent's writing it all, which is fine. I mean, Kent's a good writer, but, I mean, if you know anything about Matt Kent, I mean, he does extensive research, and he plans things out meticulously, and, you know, he's got everything exactly where it's supposed to go. And so, again, having this curveball thrown at him at the last minute certainly couldn't have helped him make a better story, right? It only could have hurt. And so, again, I think it's too bad, and I think that if it wasn't for the fact that it was changed so much, we'd probably wouldn't be noticing the cracks, so to speak. But that being said, I am going to read it. I think the big ideas are still great. The whole idea that Livewire would take this step and you know, have this reaction, and then what are the consequences? That all still fascinates me. So we'll definitely be checking out the rest of the story and letting you know what we think. So there's not a lot of stuff coming out for the 4th of July. We've got the volume 1 of Quantum and Woody, and then we've got Valiant High issue 3. So not sure what we'll be talking about next week, but I can guarantee you that we will be here for a Valiant Sunday. Have you been reading the Valiant High stuff, Jesse?
I'm going to be 100% honest. The answer is I have all of them, but I have not read them. I don't know if it's an aversion to it or just something. I just need to get a good cup of coffee and sit down and dig in. I'll probably get a good cup of coffee, sit down and dig in.
Yeah, you're one over on me, because I didn't even buy them. Obviously, I have review copies, but yeah, I don't know. It's just something. It just didn't really appeal to me. So it may be something that I'll wait and kind of see what everybody else says about it, and maybe I'll check it out, maybe not. But worst case scenario, next week we'll get back to the chronology. We've only done one issue so far. For those not familiar, the chronology, it's basically a reading order from when Valiant restarted in 2012, and we're starting with that first arc of Exo Manowar. And so, like I said, so far we've only had a chance to do one. And basically those chronology episodes are what we'll do when there's not a particular book that we want to talk about that just came out or is just about to be released. So that's probably the way we'll lean. We certainly hope that you'll join us for that. We want to thank you all for listening, and I want to thank Jesse for joining me to talk some Shadow Man.
Oh, absolutely. I'm always down for a conversation. While talking about issues is great, I really, really enjoy breaking down mythos and the storyline and the psychology behind it and where things are going and where they've been. So, I'm not going anywhere.
Right on. Sounds good. Well, if you listeners want to check out any of our previous episodes, don't forget you can go to lrmonline.com. You can also find us on iTunes. Just do a search for The Comic Source. Comic Source is also found on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just do a search for The Comic Source on those social platforms. All three places are great spots to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Quick reminder, I'll be at the amazing Las Vegas Comic-Con this coming weekend, the 29th and 30th. I'm just going to be there on Friday and Saturday, and we'll be there Sunday. So if you're going to be there, let me know. Love to meet up with you, hook you up with a comic source lanyard, take a picture, all that kind of great stuff. So once again, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.